rein in the right to even not just express anything, but think certain things too. And you'll find that you get the actual nudge units. And they do have nudge units. I've given talks on them and put the links up as to who they are, etc. And they do literally will come and they'll get in touch with you after trying to nudge you off into other areas of study or whatever it happens to be, or conversation. Because we're in this system that's often decried as being similar to the Chinese social credit system. You've been in it for years, folks. What's happening today was designed before they gave you the internet. I hope you understand that. I'm constantly astonished at the people who you could educate and educate and educate with evidence of how we're guided step by step into every year, actually, and every new thing that comes along, we're guided into it and how to accept things, what our opinion should be and so on, and given all the evidence. But they go straight back in to thinking we're still stumbling down through time somehow, because it's just too huge for them to imagine that billions of people across the world can be guided by the same people at the same time along the same path. Nothing is easier when you understand how to do it and you have the means to do it and the authority to do it. There were books churned out, lots of books on the global society and the coming socialist order, etc., of the world. And before that you had the Fabian Society going way back to its foundation, talking about bringing in the socially controlled society, meaning scientifically controlled society. You've had all the characters that came out in the front of some of the organizations, because they were front people for them, like Lord Bertrand Russell. And you could read his stuff as a child and actually be carried off with it. It seemed very practical and often very illogical, the way that he talked about things. Do you really want repetitive war, etc.? And here's how you can avoid it. But his solutions to it all is for, again, the same controlled society by using the sciences of control, mind control, and programming of children in a perfect scientific way. And again, right through their childhood and right through their adulthood as well. Well, you're in that. That's called lifelong education, they call it. I gave talks on this when we were given the internet years ago, and before it got to where it is today, where in the 1930s and 40s, they had people coming out for world socialism. One of them was a bishop in London. They call him the Red Bishop. He was quite open about the need for conformity across the world and how to shape the people's minds and how it would have to start again, as always, with the children and continue, he said, right through their lives. That's, and at the time, people would scratch their heads and think, well, I'm not going to go to night school for my whole life. No, he was talking about entertainment. And the radio in his day had taken a chunk of people's time with very enticing plays and serials where folk could, and don't forget where the word serial comes from series, right? And they would tune in to find out what happens at the cliffhanger from the day before, half-hour shows and things like that. And people would rush home to try and get them. Women who, in those days, in the 1930s and 40s, would all tune into the radio or meet with friends' houses and listen to the radio to hear what happens. So you've got behavior modification as to what you're doing that day, you see. And then you have the added influence of the messaging implanted in the story, the social messaging. So it's never stopped, but that was what he meant by it. And today, with television, that was incredible, what an amazing tool that was for the controllers. Eh? And Adam Curtis did some good documentaries on that alone, on how it was used. But you really are today with the internet and all the rest of it, and with worldwide systems with supercomputers and algorithms managing all of us and guiding all of us along where it wants you to go, you see, as opposed to where you wanted to go and so on. It's getting much easier to control everybody, and you get the same flow of information, which is a dearth of information right now. That's why tonight I'm not going to give you much news at all, because news, as I said, we've turned the new chapter that the elites wanted for a long time. They don't want you knowing what's coming up in bills and laws and government, because you used to protest against them and maybe change the outcome. So what they did is train society to leave it to the experts. Just play yourselves and use your free time for entertainment and be programmed at the same time. And then governments just put handouts that are dispersed through different media. And that's how you get the information of any laws that are passed, etc. So you see how they've managed to squeeze you out of participating in what's called democracy. and I know it's a con democracy, but that they manage to put people, squeeze you out of it, even the right to really know what's going on. And eventually it will be a crime if you demand to know what's going on. I really mean that, because the system, even the Club of Rome has said democracy would never work. It didn't and hasn't and would never work. It's used as a tool, you see, to get everybody else to go along with policies, thinking that you do have a say in things for change. That's the purpose of it. But in reality, as you've probably all seen, we're living in a very dictatorial system. But as an example, and so this will continue from last week's talk, perhaps, but as an example, I was thinking of George C. Scott. He was a good actor, obviously a good actor, and a good character actor. But and of course, he was in some just bubblegum movies too, down through the years, like anybody would do for just for the money. But he was in one about the Hindenburg. Again, speculative idea of what may have caused this, the big Hindenburg bomber. The Hindenburg, of course, blew up coming back, coming from Germany to New York as it was landing. So what caused it, you see? And of course, this was the 1930s when Adolf Hitler was in power. And it's a little bit in the movie, I remember, where they had passports being asked for and questions being asked to passengers leaving Germany, going to New York. And it's portrayed, again, as the usual, there's nothing in the world worse than the Nazi system, as though they never had that kind of thing in previous and parallel systems at that time. Of course they did, because a lot of what Hitler brought into being, and it's a socialist system, was taken from the communist system, Soviet socialist republics, and it's adapted into it, into Germany, of course. And the Soviets were far more brutal than the Nazis even were in the 1930s. Because the Soviets had already slaughtered, by the Bolsheviks, they slaughtered the entire intelligentsia of the country. The top leaders of it earlier on had boasted about how they wiped out a whole class. Then they replaced it with their own, you see. It's amazing how one thing is bad, but a similar slaughter is somehow not worth mentioning. And it's not to hold grudges, but I'm saying here's a story in it. So here's the Nazis asking for passports and why are you going to New York and all this. And I thought, this is portrayed, I think it was done in the 1970s, the movie. And yet it's nothing to what we've taken calmly and it's routine today across the whole Western world, going on an aircraft with a massive, bigger system called Homeland Security in the States. And barrages of metal detectors and all the rest. Isn't someone just asking why you're going to visit so-and-so? It's way beyond that. But that's portrayed back then as bad, you see. How we adapt into systems. It's amazing to me how we adapt into systems which can parallel something and surpass something that was shown as being diabolical at the time. You see how it's dangerous, it's so dangerous to forget. And I've given talks on how we're trained to forget all these little strides that you make. Because under the guise of keeping you safe, they always strip you, always down through history, of your rights. And the first one in goes the right of privacy. You're in a dream today, a dream of tyrants that's our nightmare. And we take it so calmly as being not as for our own good, you see. History, I've said before, is a horror show. Down through history, down through many, many, a horror show. Terrifying the public with scary stories. It's an old technique, and then they come out and once they've convinced you the world's going to end, then they tell you what you must do to stop it, and you obediently comply with their demands. Very old trick. Just like the ancient priests would do the mumbo jumbo for good crops and so on, and to ensure that the sun would rise the next day, the sun priests, etc. And they would terrify the public and say, after a bad crop, well, that's because you didn't give us enough payoffs, basically, enough awards and rewards or enough of your labor or your diamonds, rubies, whatever it happened to be, and your gold or silver. And that's how many ancient priesthoods survived across the world. Latin America had it. You have it, of course, in different parts across the Middle East. And so on, a very, very old technique of terrifying the people. And, of course, as they had a life of leisure, these priests, then they could study and collect information, which becomes education for themselves. And that's why it was passed on very secretively amongst themselves, information on the study of the stars and how stars moved and the positions of them and so on. And also the planets as well, positions of planets. And then they could bring in omens, you see, and portents and terrify the public again by knowing when you'd get eclipses through many, many centuries of study. And that was literally magic to the peasantry, the literate peasantry across the planet in the ancient world, where the high priests would do amazing dances and so on and terrify them with their curses and oaths. And sure enough, here's a trial. It's like a trial, you know, before you throw your money in to them. This is what could happen if you don't. You keep giving us money to make sure the sun keeps up and comes up. And it goes all dark for a while. Oh, my God. And what a power, right? Over literate people. And you understand that the fights people had over such a long period of time to get individual rights, because you were always treated as a people. That was it, the people. You're the people. You're not so-and-so. You're the people. And those in power have always tried to keep it the same way. Individualism is the worst enemy of totalitarian systems. They will not tolerate it, and they can't tolerate it. Mao Zedong said the same thing when he was asked about the things he feared, and he thought about it, and he says he didn't fear weapons or guns or anything. He said, I fear someone who's got a big idea. The same term that the Bush, George Bush, the two Bushes, actually the father and the son, both used in their speeches on a new world order. A big idea, they called it. Because in the circles, you see, who rule the world, in the club, you might say, it doesn't matter what party that you pretend to belong to, they're all in the same club, and they've gone through the same rituals, etc. But the big idea, of course, is someone who comes along and comes up tonight, a religion, for instance, terrifies them. It terrifies them, because believe it or not, religion will motivate people much quicker, faster, uniformly, so they'll cooperate, than anything else. Starvation won't do it the same way either. But for cooperating with each other along a belief system, they'll do it, and it terrifies them. And so the first thing they have to do is destroy the real workable religions, the ones that worked and gave rights to the people. And when I get back to the ancient religions that did the sun worship and so on, that's different altogether. These are the same characters that had sacrifices and so on. In the Christian world, it gave, for the first time, individual rights to people. Individual rights. And that took a long time to ferment properly and come down through time. And if you look at the end into the 1800s, 1900s in Europe and in Britain especially, the changes that eventually came to be, and it took a long time to do so, and it was never made perfect or anything like that. But look at the changes they made for the rights of people. That all came from Christian societies, including the abolition of slavery and things like that. It all came from the same. So always don't forget the things that you're destroying now really were the end of an era. It came from the end of an era of Christian thought and conscience, because the thought gives you conscience. Being a Christian gives you conscience. It doesn't justify the horrible societies that ruled over people, no doubt about it, and used people just like cannon fodder for their wars and so on. Doesn't excuse it at all. But we've got to remember that basic human rights all came from the same people. And now you're going backwards, under the guise of conformity again for the planet, and keeping you all safe. And you have less rights than you did 20, 30 years ago. And it was done without your permission. It was all done with governments just passing laws amongst themselves at the top, uniformly, which were all drafted up before 9/11 even happened, apparently. You know, that all came out too. And now you have professionals running our systems. Professionals have nothing to do with they have doctrines, except nothing to do with democracy. Because as I said before, even the Club of Rome, the big think tank for the big management of the planet and sustainable growth and etc. These characters are the ones who don't believe in democracy, said it doesn't work. Same thing, by the way, that you'll find that some of those who were put on trial at Nuremberg after World War II. If you ever go through, it's painstaking, of course, like most things are, they painstakingly go through things, but you find they kept going on and on and on, trying to get people to confess to their ills and their evils in the Nazi party, the upper echelons of the Nazi party. And it was Goring, who had been the air chief, you know, they kept on about him, and he was definitely a bit of psychopathic almost an actor type, hysterical type personality. He loved the show business type side of things as a leader. But he did say that the reason that Germany, in the middle of a mass depression, where nothing was working, and hyperinflation and all the rest, he said the reason that they brought in the Nazi Party and then did away with the basic democratic rights, he says, because democracy could not work at that time. You see? And basically, we're told the same thing after 9/11. They still use the term democracy, because you're still allowed to vote for leaders. Whether it's all real or not doesn't make any difference. I don't believe it's all real. And I think it's very much like the Politburo of the Soviet system, because the joke was true. It was a true joke, but you get four folk to vote for the Politburo. A Politburo member, A, B, C, or D, all from the same one-party system. If you look at the systems today, you're really looking at the same global, when they all have the same things in mind, globalization for and sustainable development, with carbon taxes at the top, sustainable society, meaning population control big time, food control big time, wages control big time, all these things, energy controls big time. It's the same kind of system, folks. I don't care if you use democracy or not. When they don't have really a diverse goal between parties, then they're all really the same, exactly what Carl Quigley said in his own book, Tragedy and Hope, that eventually the parties would all be spouting the same thing at election time to get in. As I say, we've never had. I can remember giving the talks before 9/11 happened, and then the night and the week that 9/11 happened, and I knew there was a massive agenda going to be unrolled very quickly. And I said, the hardest thing you'll have from now on to do, the hardest fight you'll have, is to hold on to your sanity. Because everything literally that was has to be destroyed to bring in the new. Everything. Because the 21st century is a century of change and transition, as they call it. It's all change. And this was, again, getting back to last week's talk, I was thinking about it. We were warned about it from so many different people in the know. Many of them were actually in the know and in the planning system of what was to come, like the family of the Huxleys. Julian Huxley was adamant in the need to depopulate all the wrong peoples, meaning working classes too, to be superfluous. Again, though, it's all a specialist class that was advising everybody, and you had the time and motions people, they called it too, for efficiency. And then you had, oh, the time will come when there's overproduction in this economic system, and therefore we'll have to have less folk looking for jobs, etc. So you depopulate a controlled, scientifically organized society. All discussed, and they all signed on to, including Julian Huxley, of course, a big avant-garde part of it. And they're all members of the aristocracy. Quite amazing, including Bertrand Russell. And then they came out, and next thing you know, all the working classes are falling. Well, like, yeah, he speaks for me, it makes a lot of sense, you know. Because all they have to do for the working classes is to offer them a few goodies here and there. They always do. Listen to the parties today, they all sound the same. Vote for me, we'll give you free this, free that, free healthcare, free education, free food even, you know what I mean? Everything's going to be free in this paradise. And it's also astonished me how simplistic it is and how people fall for it. But then I'm a bit different. I don't even have one of these convenience cards for any particular store. Everybody lives on these days, apparently. If they get a little percentage off, or they get air miles points or something. They call them mouse traps in the companies that come up with the ideas for marketing these things. And everyone's thinking they're getting a few deals here and there, and they give all their data away. They're watched like you wouldn't believe. Is shared with governments and you know, and other departments, and they know everything you're eating. And I've already had discussions, and I gave talks many years on this, where they would have come out with different departments of health and saying, you know, we've noticed you're eating too much of this or that or whatever it is, you see. And eventually it's going to be black marks. This is the same system as China. Don't you get it? We were doing it long before China put all that in. And they didn't have to force anybody here either. They just said, oh, you know, if you take these cards and then we can watch everything you're eating and so on, you'll get little discounts and all that. And away they go. It's like scratching wind. Away they go. As I said before, what tyrant in history ever thought of just getting them to get down on their hands and knees and bow to you and do anything you want them to do and give their will to you? If you just give them just free offers. No tyrant ever thought of that before. Never dawned on them. They thought that they'd beat it into you and conquer you. Well, you're conquered without it, you see. It's just astonishing. And therefore, when you're going to be bad, you've had a bad thought, or you've looked at something on the net that piqued your interest, you didn't know something, and you may go looking for more information, and it's a naughty thing to look at, and you're not supposed to, it's on the X, you know, you don't look at that thing, because your masters don't want you knowing that, whatever topic it is, or even think, it doesn't mean it's true or not. See, you're not allowed to have your opinion on anything. That's the point of a uniform opinion in society on every topic. You're all going to be like clones of each other. That's as close as I've got it at the moment without total genetic engineering of a generation. But, as I say, people forget so quickly where it all comes from. Back in the 30s, you had Aldous Huxley, who at least came out and warned people about what was going to come if they didn't stay awake and take an interest in the powers that ruled over them. That's why he did Brave New World. It was a warning. It wasn't just to get big money and get his name in the lights, etc. He was an oddball in the family. And he had his own problems, which made him think a bit deeper. And he didn't really have an interest in controlling people. Whereas his family had always been involved in classifying different types of people and intellects and all the rest of it. And intermarried even in some areas and with the Darwin family and so on. And social engineering, etc. But he himself saw what was coming because he was in on meetings. He listened to the people talking to in his own family that were in other meetings. Julian Huxley was up to his eyes in plans to control society, Planned Parenthood, and all the rest of it. And UNESCO. Anything that made uniform systems throughout the world, which they could control. So Aldous Huxley did warn people through Brave New World. And perhaps at the time, it's always the same actually, those who are out of the loop, living their own mundane life, and it's, you know, you couldn't imagine it. It seemed too science fiction, way off in some distant never-never land type of thing to take effect on their minds until many years later. And yet it was already being discussed how to implement it when he wrote the book. It's all eugenics, remember, a eugenic system, where people were literally bred and designed to be whatever the work they were designed to do. That solved the problem for Marx's redistribution of labour, different categories of labour. And so you would only create them genetically. And they would take all they make sure they took their medications and so on. They didn't get pregnant. But they could procreate all the time. And take as many partners. There was no taboos whatsoever at all about sex, you see, in this wonderful city that they had built in the Brave New World. And they could acquire any goods that they wanted, materialistic goods that they wanted. No one was poor, but it was like a world of fun and play. And during the day, you had your job assigned to you, and you were designed literally. The genes that they claimed that would give you any unhappy genes would have been removed from the sperm or the ovum. And you were guaranteed to be like the uniform generation of the you that was before you, in whatever classification it happened to be. It's interesting, too, that Brave New World, the author of it, taught George Orwell briefly for a while. And then Orwell came out with his book, 1984. So they had a comparison of the two books, but it wasn't just a comparison. It was of things which were definitely going to come. And in George Orwell's day, it had come to an extent with communism, with the boot stamping on the face, human face forever, and then had gone through the same system in a German fashion through the Nazi Party. Both big experiments, very similar, but in socialism, scientific socialism as they call it. But he also knew that they did experiments which would go further than that. At the same time, we should remember too, and the reason we're into this tonight as well is because, as I say, this new chapter we're in, you're not getting any real news, if you noticed. You really aren't, are you? You're being kept out of the loop because they've weaned you off of your right to know things. Quite amazing, isn't it? So you get declarations from government after laws and things have passed, but you won't be really aware of it, and maybe not even concerned. Because there's so much entertainment out there to follow, or what the stars are doing, or who's sleeping with whom. and the star-studded glitterati, as they call it. So anyway, in 1948, Orwell's book came out, and it was called 1984, The Reversal of 48. He had a title which was changed to be The Last Man, basically. He wanted to call it The Last Man, but his publisher didn't like that, and it was self-explanatory in it, what happens to Winston in the book 1984, what he meant by The Last Man, and the comments of O'Brien, who's assigned to torture him, about him being, if you're the last man, you know. And he's look at his face in the mirror after his teeth have all fallen out and all the rest of it. He's been shocked to death with terrible electric shocks and so on. The whole point was to destroy, completely destroy, your individuality. The individuality that separates you from the state, whatever the state happens to be called or the system is called, you and the state. Until you couldn't see yourself as apart from the state. In fact, eventually you'd burst into tears and be horrified if you thought this, you were barred from the state. If you thought that you had to be the state's thoughts and not your own. One think was a crime and things like that. So it's just fascinating to see what was to come to. But here you have 1933, and who taught a man who came out with 1948. And you also had Bertrand Russell churning his books out in the 40s too about the coming scientific socialistic system right through into the 1950s and 60s. And he worked with all the groups, Frankfurt School, Macy Group, all the big ones who were to set up a new culture for the planet post-World War II. That's Bertrand Russell, for those who don't know that. And then you had in 1948, it was published like in English in 1949, a book too by a professor in medieval studies called Etienne Gilson. And it was The Terrors of the Year 2000. And it was something that I read in school when I was a child, a teacher, and it conjured up images in the mind of a horrible change that would definitely come around the year 2000. It's interesting too to me now, because they had big debates when you had the year 2000, if that was when it would change, and they even had all the usual scary stuff out, and would time stop, your Y2K, all this kind of stuff, all nonsense stuff, the same kind of stuff in a different form of the first millennium, when comets would portend ill things on Earth and plagues and so on, see. But they really went to town at the top with all this coming year 2000 and prophecies, and you had the Mayan calendar and prophecies. We did that again later when it didn't work out in 2010 or 12, and it didn't work then either. So, but the fact is, it's always used. But what you do get out of it is the big plan. The big plan was definitely planned for what was to happen from then on, from 2000 onwards. You had, as I say, intimated from the speeches by the Bushes, the two Bushes, a new world order coming into view, a big idea. And again, I even read these articles on there, and I said, you know, what do you think they mean by this? It's like an occult language they were using, the terminology. And it was. It certainly was. Absolutely it was. Because everybody else is scratching their heads. What do they mean by this? And, you know, a big idea coming into view. What kind of order, you know? And what they were telling you then, too, it was all shaped and done, and you had no input in it at all. That was awfully important as well. No one had been asked about your mind. You've got a whole new system and way of living lined up for you. Do you mind? Now, of course, anything that matters, you will not get a hint at of pen to paper for a vote, never mind internet chronology and doing your internet votes and so on. But it's definitely planned. And the big boys at the top knew what it meant, and you had these different smiling people at the top of the media too, little smiles here and there, of knowing smiles, as they call it. And then they even had the big debates. What does it really mean in the top scientists came out? Well, actually, the year 2000, you know, that actually starts in 2001. Eh? And so, bingo, in 2001, you have 9/11, the complete unrolling of a whole system. And you think, well, we just, okay, we'll have to give up rights and for free to be safe and all that. But did you ever think that everything had to be changed? Everything that was had to be turned upside down? Because that was in Etienne Gilson's book, The Terrors of the Year 2000. Everything that was. Like, last night I touched on different things too. It got me into it, to thinking back on the track of that, because last week I mentioned about Nietzsche, for instance, and how people swallow this stuff up from philosophers And they don't even see philosophers were given almost a godlike status by the atheists in later years. It was the Muslim countries that saved most of the philosophers of ancient Greece, at least it was their writings for the West now to use. But you understand that you got a false impression of even Greece, because Greece, they weren't all walking around wearing miniskirts, these guys in togas, and prattling on about how bright and clever they were. Again, school, it comes from the word scola, which is leisure. It takes a leisure class, just like an ancient priesthood, even pre-Christian, for the sun gods and so on, to study stars and all the rest of it, to even impress the punters who worship them. So you need free time and nothing else to do, and the basic scavenging for food or growing it has to be supplied for you and done for you. Well, that's how Greece was too for the wealthy. Even amongst themselves, they bickered and they liked a good argument about things, as opposed to having an absolute doctrine on it. But you definitely had the beginnings of people who wanted doctrines. And really, it was the early church that gave some credence to some parts of the logical ideas of logic from Greece and philosophy, and kept that going as well. But didn't elevate the philosophers up to a status higher than the gods. So many things are misconceptions that we have today. But getting back to Gilson, he talks about the trepidation of things to come. And as I say, Nietzsche, last week, I thought about Nietzsche, that got me onto this topic again, when he literally came out and declared, you see, that now man was God. If there's no God, then what am I? Then I am God. The same phrase, actually, as the very popular mantra of the New Agers. It's called New Agers today, who literally think they can go through different rituals and become a god. And I remember the old documentary by Shirley MacLaine, who chats about it, and then you see her on the beach as a helicopter goes higher and higher, and she's spinning around saying, I'm God, I'm God, I'm God. Tell a little squeaky voice, I'm God, you know. And that again is the end result of throwing order out of the window. The New Age, as it developed, was to gain power, unfortunately. And when man becomes God to gain power, then you have chaos, as they all put spells on each other. And they all hate each other and use or abuse each other. You're back to primitive chaos. They don't want, basically, a religion which steadies them. And it steadies the people by giving them rules, basic rules of rights and wrongs. Not just for an order, whatever the order is they join, but literally an order for life and living itself. And most of the time, they'll miss all of the points that are given out to them of improving themselves. Because often, improving yourself means you must give something up. And they don't have the patience to wait and see what happens by giving something up. And therefore, the greatest things, or miracles, as used to be called, will pass them by and they don't notice them, or they don't experience them, they don't have them. And so they go deeper and deeper into invocations and sacrifices and terrible things like that to try and get that power. Of course, there's courage at the top, because anything you join that's a systematic system, you know, basically a formula, also is a pyramid with the controls at the top. Not all religions can go the same way with controls at the top when they get infiltrated or corrupt themselves. And anything that's done by humankind always ends up corrupt anyway. It's human nature. So there you go. So, and the more you throw off the controls of human nature, which are self-imposed and voluntary, then the more corrupt the system becomes. That's how it is, really. That's a very simplistic way of putting it, but in a simplified way. But the fact is, that really is what present-day magic has brought people to. And they miss the point of all. And they don't want something that's been so maligned and abused and misused too over time. That's what happens. As Christianity. They don't want that. Where you're given the choices of doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And everybody knows what's right and wrong. You all do. I don't care who you are. You know it. So, the terror is the year 2000, where everything would happen, and everything that once was forbidden or warned against would become the norm. All rights were turned upside down. That's what Gilson was talking about. And he was taking it from almost a canonical type of viewpoint from the Middle Ages onwards, and how humanity existed and saw itself from a different strata of society all the way down through time to the present, at that time, the present time he was living in. And as he mentioned Nietzsche as well, that again, if God is dead, then who is God? Then I am, man is God, you see. And all the things that were prohibited, and generally to keep a society safe, even workable with your neighbors and everything else, could be turned upside down and thrown out the window, you see. When all the laws and rules for survival, and rights and don't steal, the basic commandments and so on, all those things were just tossed out the window. If God was dead, then what was impossible? Nothing became impossible. And that's the terror, you see. That's one of the biggest terrors. That now nothing is impossible. Killing millions of people now is possible. That goes in again to talks I've given on Kissinger and Brzezinski, big top security advisors. And Brzezinski saying the same thing, and Kissinger as well, I think he went along with it and said the same thing himself. They both said the same things often because they both belong to the same organizations at the top. And at one time it was almost impossible to kill a million people and dispose of them and deal with it, the manpower, logistics, and all the rest of it. But now it was easier to kill millions of people, to kill them, than contain them and manage them. All these things tie into what I'm talking about, right? The terrors of the year 2000. From the actual book itself, it says, is in very truth, it's a beautiful, frightening, and penetrating prose poem, in a sense. And Gilson gives to us, without scholarly references, even enigmatically, in what concerns his medieval base histories of Raoul Glaber, and others too, that's all contained inside of it, because he draws from previous authors and writers. And some of the book actually came from one of his friends who died already. I think it was Fossil. If you read it, it's a good read to make you think, for those who like thinking. A lot of people now today don't want to think. Anything makes them uncomfortable, and been trained, of course, to turn away from anything which might make them a wee bit edgy or uncomfortable on something. They'll turn away from it because it might be scary. But yourself, the last thing you want is maybe impose self-restrictions upon yourself, or maybe you should change this or that or whatever, you know. Or maybe you should be involved in certain things. Although, even people who, in a Christian sense, used to take it that the world was evil. And technically, I can't really disagree with them. The things of the world that happen in it because of humanity itself can be definitely evil. Let's admit that, at least. Admit it. And the animals have no choice on what they do to each other, predators and prey. And even you'll find even chipmunks will fight each other over food in an area. They can't help their behavior. So here we are with our ability to think and choose. But inside humanity, you have the different types cropping up. And there's no doubt about it, the psychopathic group have always had a high position. If not governing the world and the countries of the world, then administrating it and planning it for those who own it. That's why I've come to conclude a long time ago. But anyway, as I say, Gilson goes through some of the histories from 1914 onwards throughout Europe, what happened, and the horrible wars that were, you know, millions of men threw themselves against other opponents, millions of men, and really what was the first mechanized war, a more perfected weaponry, and it was the first war where they admitted that everybody, all civilians were part of it. It was called total warfare. That became a dogma, a theory taught in officer training in Britain initially, and then spread outside Britain to other countries, to total warfare, that no one in a nation could be basically left alone. They're all a likely target because you're making something, or you're keeping, just like we do today, you'll starve nations. I don't say you, I shouldn't say you, you don't starve nations, but those who rule you starve nations for their own agendas, to make people supposedly overthrow the guys who are ruling them. So starve you into, this is the hope they have, to starve you and until you rebel and overthrow whoever's ruling over you. What a very humane way to do things, eh? Very civilized indeed. Very intellectual. This is the 21st century and they're still doing it, eh? So, believe it, the same characters under sustainability are going to do the same with all of you, folks. In rationing, etc. I've already read some of the articles in the past where they've discussed this. And it is, and they come under different terminology, but it's all, it means the same thing. They're awfully good at hiding things with terminology to confuse you. But anyway, I'll definitely go through a little bit of this, things to come, as I say, with terrors of the year 2000. And that's where he traces it back to as well, as people like Nietzsche and the philosophers who trained you step by step into the acceptance of the utter horror of it all. A horror, I mean, 1914 should have shown them that you couldn't go on with a war right away. It was so obvious where machine guns, the heavy-duty machine guns on bipods and tripods, they could fire 600 rounds a minute in belt-fed ammunition, were placed along the trenches every sometimes 10, 15, 20 feet. So anything running towards them on a flat plane got halved in two. And they could not, you couldn't miss them. With armies, they weren't allowed even, as they attacked, to lie down and crawl towards an enemy to give themselves a lower profile. No. And they kept that upright through the whole war. Well, if that's civilization, you can keep it. And then they added gases to try to, you know, again, all the things getting back to the idea of Nietzsche, when all the things that made things horrific to the sensibilities were now tossed out the window, all the rules, therefore anything was possible, nothing was prohibited. You understand? Nothing. Total war itself, except the fact they might have to annihilate whole nations of people. That went right on and through World War II. Whole nations of people. And it's still the policy of some countries at the moment. All because, as I say, the Europeans first had tossed out the window for various, some of them good reasons as well, and terrible industrial revolutions and poverty and squalor galore of a society that became hardened because of the conditions and threw their religions out the window and allowed their leaders to grab Nietzsche and all the other philosophers too, to go along with it, to toss their religion out the window, and it made everything possible. Nothing was unthinkable. And it's been on a roll ever since, folks. All that was right is now wrong. All that was wrong is now right. Gilson also talks about, in his book, remember 1948, 49, it was published, that they called it Pasteurism at the time for Louis Pasteur, who, of course, there was a great discoverer of bacterium and studied off it too, and pasteurization of milk, but they called it Pasteurism. Actually, it was better known at that time for biowarfare. It didn't have the term biowarfare. But he's talking about the banks of the arsenal stuff they were creating back then, and had been during World War II, up until his book was published, of diseases, and altering them to be more efficient killers of humanity. All that was unthinkable became thinkable. Some of the highest people on the planet are paid to go off in the mornings. They may have they all have very wealthy homes, live a very wealthy lifestyle, all paid by our tax money, and they design ways of killing us and other peoples. And we call this civilization that we live in. And Gilson also talked about how they could change genders of people by design, by designing babies. This is in the 40s. And how they wouldn't stop there. They make new types of humans to suit specific jobs. I've talked about this before. There's definitely branches of science and biology. And they talk about bioengineering humans, actually coupled with animals, if need be, different genes, to create specific types of humans that can even go under sea and become divers and welders and so, without the need for scuba gear, etc. And this is genuine stuff. I'm not making it up. The X-Files, that's all part of it, that's where that all came from. It's all this kind of stuff, discussed a long time ago. Because there's nothing to stop anything from happening today, you understand? Because the rules that kept people from experiencing the horror was not to even allow it to happen. That's been thrown out the window. And now you get the sense of it all coming in waves, you see. And you experience the horror. And it'll be done scientifically. And you'll be persuaded into it, like Huxley said. You come to love your servitude, no matter how bad it is and how demanding it is. You'll love your servitude. You'll be convinced and nudged into it by the nudge behavior groups, behavior on insights teams, and so on. It's all here, folks. And the West goes sterile and doesn't even stop and ask why. And doesn't ask the obvious question is, how come it's not a crisis? Well, it's not a crisis because it's planned that way, obviously. Or it would be a crisis. Huh? If there's a crisis, you might all go extinct. Believe you me, the farmers who own us would want to find out what's causing it, and they would stop it like any other farmer, obviously. It's interesting, too, that because of that they knew they'd create different kinds of designed humans. Go into the impact of science on society, but Bertrand Russell tied in with it, too. And you'll see what he talks about. It's all connected. Russell said on page 50, I've read this before, too. And it's good to repeat things to people because they forget so fast. He even mentions how repetition is so essential to condition you. Well, see, repetition on yourself is essential for you to free yourself as well. He said anyway, he says, 50, their philosopher laid it down, that education should aim at destroying free will. Right? This is the guy who worked with the Macy Group, who was designed to set up as a massive international think tank to create a post-World War II culture, which would be totally under control. And creating free sex and all the rest of it, then coming with abortion to deal with the fallout of the free sex, etc., and the destruction of the family unit, yada, yada, all that stuff. They worked with it. They worked with all what's called the radical groups, the socialist groups. They worked with the groups, the Frankfurt School, for instance. And the Macy Group were also given the authority to do so, to create a new culture, by Eisenhower, it was, when he became president of the U.S., so they weren't just doing a thing all on their own. This is still to the same today. The big groups of runners have authorization from the top. Some of them don't even know that, but the guys who rule them and run them, they do know this. It's been planned that way. So 50 laid it down, education should aim at destroying free will. See, you do free will by destroying the individual. So that after people have left school, they shall be incapable throughout their lives, the rest of their lives, of thinking or acting otherwise than as their schoolmasters would have wished. But in his day, this was an unattainable ideal. What he regarded as the best system in existence produced Karl Marx. In the future, such failures are not likely to occur where there is dictatorship. And that's the famous part, too, that I've mentioned many times and many folk have caught on to. Diet, he says, the food that you're given, right, is available for you. Injections. And yes, he went on to say that in injunctions, laws and so on, will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticism of the powers will become psychologically impossible. Think of all, you talk about your social credit system, and you're already seeing it too, you're naughty, naughty, no money for you this week, you see, things like that. That's how it's done. Any serious criticism of the powers of it will become psychologically impossible. Even if all are miserable, all will believe themselves happy, because the government will tell them that they are so. A totalitarian government with a scientific bent might do things that to us would seem horrifying, he says. Again, getting back to Nietzsche, thinking about Nietzsche, nothing would become impossible, you see. If there's no God, then all the rules that you had, morality rules and so on, moral rules, are out the window. And that made a lot of people excited. What they could do then, right? So, he goes on about the Nazis. He says they were more scientific than the present rulers of Russia when he wrote the book. And were more inclined towards the sort of atrocities that I have in mind, he says. They were said, I don't know that with what truth, to use prisoners in concentration camps as material for all kinds of experiments, some involving death after much pain. If they had survived, they would probably have soon take to scientific breeding. So the whole point of it is getting at in socialism, they'll eventually take to scientific breeding. Any nation which adopts this practice will within a generation secure great military advantages. The system, one may surmise, will be something like this, except possibly in the governing aristocracy. All but 5% of males and 30% of females will be sterilized. This is a guy who's exposing it under the guise of, you know, but he's actually advocating it. Because he worked with a couple of groups that gave us the present system, that gave you a lot of these things that are already happening. And this also gave ideas to a lot of authors to write books on it, and you had The Handmaid's Tale and things like that. All these things come out of characters like Russell, who was at the head of massive organizations and for social engineering. So anyway, it says, oh, but 5% of males and 30% of females will be sterilized. The 30% of females will be expected to spend the years from 18 to 40 in reproduction in order to secure adequate cannon fodder. As a rule, artificial insemination will be preferred to the natural method. That's also where George Orwell, I mean, it wasn't just one person saying this. This was knowledge amongst those in the know. And George Orwell knew too that in 1984 they would sort of do away in his idea with the family units eventually, and even make it taboo to have just random sex sort of thing. You see? So what they eventually came up with is to promote sex and then train the people on the way of Julian Huxley's idea. Promote sex, the fallout will be mass pregnancies, unwanted, and then the state will come in and either pay for women to have children at home, just without men involved, except for impregnating them, and or else abortions. So it all worked out. You never lived through an era of a system. You never lived through an era of a system where you're really your own person with your own mind and you're an independent thinker. Very, very few people today are, actually. And you're given things to chase, and you do chase them. You're given leaders to follow, and you'll follow them as well, without even noticing when they've been maybe taken over or showing their true colours. And if you come out with a lot of factual evidence, they can be verified, they'll put out someone behind you with a lot more money, put out the same information, they'll grab your stuff, and they'll add crazy things to it, like the space aliens involved or whatever it happens to be. And then you're lumped in with the craziness of them. That's counterintelligence, that's what it's called. Again, getting back to not just Matsy Tung's idea, but his greatest fear was a big idea that wasn't their own, you see. So if you come out with a big idea of who's running the world and so on, you will. It won't be easy for you. It really won't be easy for you. And Russell said it, but Russell also said in his own book too, that if you came out with a lot of information and you couldn't be won over, if you had a good mind and you could convey things to people naturally, and you can be won over and work for them and take all your scholarships and go to the right granite stone buildings to be taught and impressed and awed by all the statues of famous people before you, if you wouldn't go along with them, then they would have to basically eliminate you, and I mean annihilate you, because you might use your mind and the knowledge of what they were doing to you, all of the people, and inform the victims, the general public, of what was going on. Then they'd have to eliminate you, you see. They're quite open about it. Quite open indeed. Anyway, I've been kind of rambling on here, but so that was just basically what came to my mind. Because I say, I do have articles here of news, but they're worthless as far as I'm concerned, because it's just we don't get news anymore. We get just handout statements from authorities of things that maybe are done or whatever, but really there's nothing which you can participate in and complain to government. They don't want you complaining, so you leave them alone to play themselves in government. That's what a lot of them actually do these days. Do you realize that, and I gave that, remember giving the talks years ago, that the politicians literally were given big sums of money as like grants by the government, and they could take acting lessons on deportment and so on, and they already have their own speechwriters, everything's written for them. But they even have their own PR departments for some of the politicians. If they're wealthy enough, they can have their own PR company to put out all the fake stuff that they want you to believe. Right? Royal families have it, of course. And different branches of the royal family, even the couples, have their own PR companies to keep their names in the paper. That's where you're seeing them everywhere now. And all the drama, like a soap opera, but who's not talking to you, that's all made up nonsense. Because they're also going by hits. They've got PR managers. In the digital age, there's hardly out there anymore that's real. Pretty tragic, isn't it? That this luminescent screen that's taken over your lives and runs it all has given you a completely fake reality. And now, of course, it's simply diverting you off into other areas that you maybe don't even need to go or didn't want to go into when you're looking for genuine information. They actually say, and I've heard people in universities in Canada, certain panels used to go on television years ago with these authorized professors that all, and you always knew who was the head honcho one amongst them. They actually announced there were certain topics that were just too sensitive for the public to be informed about. And that's what it said live on television. You're just too wild and crazy, you see. You're not intelligent enough to handle certain kinds of information. I'm not kidding you. No, I know who it was, but I won't say it because I certainly will be persecuted for it. And that's how things really are these days. It's getting pretty nasty, isn't it? But anyway, just think about it too, from all the different people who have helped to destroy that which was under the guise of philosophies, step by step, and then substitute themselves and their philosophies. They all have, a pyramid type of system. There's always a capstone at the top, folks. And when they're in unison across the world with a unified plan across the whole planet for every peoples, then you can guarantee they're all working together on it. Of course they are. And they used to be more open about it, but then they clammed up a bit after 9/11. They got to still make you think you still have nations. Well, they have you pay for it all, for the wars that still have to be fought. And then you'll be back to the old, but you were all global before, in the 90s, we're all global. It was a common expression. Then suddenly you become nations again when you have to fight wars, and then be back to being global. But the global aspect has never changed. And with technology, it's the same technology across the whole planet that's getting used here. And China was to be the model state for the planet, according to the United Nations. They did television documentaries on it, using those very terms. And you weren't asked about that, were you? Of course you weren't. But you still see you're democratic, won't you? Anyway, for myself, from a blabbering night, I'm afraid, because, as I say, there's nothing in the news to interest me. And most of the stories are so irrelevant in the passing of time, really, that they're hardly worth talking about. You can get plenty just to reinforce what I've said tonight, I suppose, because you see the fallout of it as things get crazier and crazier when, as I say, all that was is to be destroyed to bring in the new, and it means that everything is now the opposite everything, and opposite values, opposite laws, and even the rights and wrongs are completely reversed now, until the opposite is often, even complaining about what should be bad might be deemed evil and illegal. Astonishing, isn't it? And all came supposedly when we hit 2001, the real start of the 21st century. Interesting. Remember, you can buy the books and discs at cuttingthroughmedias.com. And remember too, you can send cash. You can use cashless systems, and you can also send international postal money orders if you're outside Canada from the post office. Easy to do, very small fee for that compared to some of the other ways of transmitting it. And people can still send their personal check as well. There's ways to do things, because things will get worse and worse as we all get nudged and warned and cut off. And it's just like sheepdogs. Sheepdogs, if you watch them working on a group of sheep, a herd, can it literally single out one or two, according to the whistles, you know, that language of whistles by the shepherds. They used to have these sheepdog demonstrations in Britain and Wales, especially. There was a really good ones in Wales. And they were so well trained, the two dogs could literally go into a pack, or a herd, as you say, of sheep, and separate the one or two that they wanted, or whatever it happened to be. Well, that's what happens to us now. They're separating you and just nudging you off away from the crowd and try to isolate you in a different pen from the rest of society, right along the lines of Bertrand Russell. From Ontario, Canada, I'm Alan Watt.
You're listening to UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around for more awesome radio?